This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome to CarCast and Edmund podcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrew, here with Alistair Weaver. Hello.
Hello, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. You know, a little tired after a week in Vegas, SEMA and the events and stuff, but I want to get into that a little bit. I spent the week out there for SEMA and then hung around for SEMA Fest, which was their concert series and automotive fest. They had Nitro Circus out there. They had Hoonigan drifting and Formula Drift and you know, motorcycles flying through the air and stunt show and a whole bunch of concerts going throughout the day and throughout the night. And you know, as we talked about SEMA Fest, it was an experiment for them. It's their first year, so we definitely wanted to cut them a little bit of slack. And I thought the concert series was fun. I thought the cars were cool. The stunt car stuff was there. I think I'd like to see the SEMA Ignited car show ultimately be a portion of that, maybe bring out some of the cars from the show floor.
So I didn't stay on. As you know, I came out for like a day.
Yes.
I was on a panel, but the thing at the weekend, there's a public day on the Friday. Then the weekend was about rock music and stuff.
Yes. So what they were trying to do is, SEMA being a trade show, they're trying to kind of bridge the gap between the business side of the industry and the enthusiast side of the industry. So you're there for the trade show, arguably that's industry only. Although, if it's industry only, why are there huge hour-long lines for autograph sessions and stuff, or when you're basically working with those people day in and day out? So I don't really fully understand it, but I get what's happening there. It's not really, the trade show isn't really about like all the consumers that show up, like under the radar. People go, oh yeah, the public sneaks in or they find a way to get a pass. That's not really what's happening. It's all the employees within the industry are going, hey, I want to bring some family members or some friends, so I'm going to apply for some extra passes through my company. I got two people working my trade booth, but I've got 12 passes that I've submitted for because I'm bringing some friends. And that's fine. They should be allowed to go and enjoy it. And that's why the booths have all this fanfare to them and crazy displays.
And it's Vegas.
And it's Vegas, right? So you want to go out there. So what they did is for the past couple of SEMAs, on Friday, they've sold a limited amount of passes to the SEMA trade show to the public. And it was identified by like the color of the lanyard or whatever. So some enthusiasts were able to walk around and meet some of the people from these companies and see some of the new parts and some of the crazy cars. And it was limited, I don't know, a few thousand tickets or something like that. And now Friday and Saturday, they were doing what's called SEMA Fest, which is, like you said, it's a concert series and automotive event that tickets are just sold to the public, and is a way for SEMA to say, hey, automotive enthusiasts, music enthusiasts, come to our concert event and experience some of the automotive entertainment there. Like we said, like drifting and Nitro Circus and stuff like that. And start to become aware of what SEMA is an advocate for the automotive industry. The concerts were great. I thought some of the bands were fantastic. We saw Imagine Dragons, AJR, Incubus, Third Eye Blind. It was a bunch. It was fun. And the Nitro Circus guys all flying through the air, motorcycles, BMX, and it was kind of fun. Now, the overall footprint was about 40 acres, and they didn't need anywhere near that amount of space. It just looked huge, and it was tough to fill that space. And they probably didn't need to start at, you know, 12 or whatever, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, like they did on Friday. Like, it can all be condensed a little bit more, but excuse me, these are some of the things they can figure out in the process. But it lacked a big car show, and I understand why they did that. So SEMA Ignited is the car show that they would do at the end of SEMA. All the cars in the convention center would fire up, and they would do this parade in front of grandstands, and the public can see it. And they'd get over to what was like before West Hall was even built. It was a huge parking lot there, and there was vendors and food and beverages, and they'd host the Battle of the Builders live, and you get to see the best of the best car builds from SEMA. But the first year they did it was at Link, and all the cars were like overheating and running out of gas because they're not allowed to have gas while they're in the convention center in them. And it took something like 4 hours to go 5 miles, and it was just a total shit show. So I think they've kind of learned that lesson, and they say, hey, let's not get overzealous and combine the SEMA Ignited thing with the SEMA Fest on the first year, unless we know exactly how it's going to go, exactly how all of those cars are going to fire up, what streets are going to go on. Is there a police escort? Is the road closed off? How are they going to get into the venue? How are we going to park them, line them up, and not have it turn into 5 hours or 4 hours of sitting in a car and things overheating? And
yeah, I was going to say, most of those aren't really designed for that stuff either.
Yeah, it's really not.
So I was chatting to the risk of driving. I was chatting to Mike Spagnola, who is the CEO of the whole
thing. Was at SEMA Fest with Mike. We were there. Oh, there you go. Music.
Oh, there we go. We shamelessly name dropped together. But and I was actually there because I was asked to be on a panel talking about the future of the cars, kind of thing that we talk about here, you know, like what's happening with EVs, what's happening with hybrids, what's happening with hydrogen, where, you know, where are we going, and what does that mean to the aftermarket? And it was nice to chat to Mike before, and he was talking about, can we turn SEMA into this, if the Formula One stays in the same place, which is, as we're recording this, what, end of next week, could you basically create like an alternative car week that combines somehow SEMA with Formula One, with, you know, with this other stuff going on, and just create this kind of like epic auto event within Vegas, which sounds very cool. My instinct is it's a slightly different audience, and I'm not sure how many people at SEMA are mad keen Formula One fans, but they might be Formula One people who want to hang around and see Formula One as like the finale to the whole SEMA experience. But it's an interesting idea of like taking this pseudo trade show and then turning it into something a lot more public facing. And this is my second time at SEMA. Well, second or third time, and first time before the pandemic. And, you know, as somebody who's come over here, and I used to go to similar things in Europe, there's a big one in Essen in Germany, but just the scale and just the money, I just find absolutely mind-blowing. And I'm sure there's people in there that like do all the detailed analysis of like, you know, if I buy this much floor space, it means this or that. But just like, can everybody in there justify the expense? Or is it just been one of these things that a lot of it's driven by ego? It's SEMA, I've got to be there, I've got to have a stand. And like, you know, we just look at like some little widget thing, or like I'm doing a cloth for your car, or like this is a piece of garage flooring, and I'm one of the 50 garage flooring people here in this enormous hall. And it's great. I love it. And I just love the whole like Americana of it. And it's just so wonderfully over the top. And it's a perfect fit for Vegas. But it's just, I'm just always blown away by how much money there is there. It's crazy.
It is. And you're right. It was very competitive. You know, the exhibitors were very competitive year after year, and they've all kind of scaled back a bit. And it's been still crazy booths and build cars, but maybe a little less on the sort of the party aspect of it, the display of it. Like they're reeling in some of the entertainment in the booths and focusing a little bit more on the business side of things. But it's really sort of become, in my mind, a media event, a way for these manufacturers to say, you know, come talk to us, come interview us, come take photos, get your videos, all the, when I say media, I mean every sort of content creator out there. No, media no longer meaning just like what you guys do specifically at Edmunds or someone in the aftermarket or Hot Rod Magazine. Media is everyone with a phone, right? They're creating content, and that content being dispersed as many places possible on social media and YouTube and blogs and podcasts and whatever, to kind of get the word out of what's new, excuse me, with some of these companies, and not just the builds, you know, what's going on with Ring Brothers and Roadster Shop and Cal Creations and stuff like that, but the parts and stuff as well. I don't know that there's a lot of meetings being taken place between the larger established companies. It seems like they have their distribution figured out. There's probably some international meetings being set, and there's still some business happening, but nowhere near the scale of SEMA maybe 15 years ago.
It's an interesting event. The one I'd compare it with, I went out to the NADA, which is the big dealer association show, and I went there in January. It was in Dallas, and this January 2024, it's going to be back in Vegas, and that's very similar. That's a bit more, it's a bit more serious probably because it's big dealer groups doing big business, but it's kind of interesting, similar sort of feel, and you know, there's also a similar dynamic of like, you know, how big is your stand? You know, there's like a status symbol that you almost need. It's like go big or go home.
So, you know, coming up now is the PRI show, Performance Racing Industry, which is owned by SEMA. It's in Indy, and it's a smaller scale version of the SEMA show with a focus more on the racing side of things. Anything from, you know, just like weekender oval track stuff and dirt racing up to full NHRA and beyond. And I've gone a couple of times. That's a fun show as well, but me being sort of a parts super freak, PRI is interesting there. Now the displays are a little different. It's more of a focus on parts, but there are displays, you know, instead of like bolt-on EFI systems that you'd see in the Holley booth, you're going to see, you know, Dart machinery and TRW there talking about pistons. Like there'll be a display about roller rockers and pistons, right? There'll be actual engine parts there. And with a focus on the, like I said, on the racing industry, the racing aspect, all the various forms of racing. So a little bit different presentation that's going on there, but also a very, very cool, a very fun show to see and to get into the nitty gritty of the technical aspects of some of those parts, but that's going to
be fun. It's kind of interesting how the aftermarket or the racing community or whatever is, you know, these shows are still huge. I mean, SEMA was like a big event just in terms of not just the scale of the show itself, but the number of people there. I think they were talking about like 150,000 people coming through or whatever. And I should say trade people. And then you compare it to LA Auto Show that's as we're recording this is next week or this week when you're listening to it. And we're kind of looking at the list and, you know, we talk about this a lot and it's a bit like, and, you know, Porsche, who normally go very big in LA, aren't there. We were expecting the Macan EV at one point. It's not there. So it's interesting that the sort of specialism and the kind of super enthusiast end of the market is still pretty buoyant. And that kind of mainstream, here's a bunch of new vehicles, take your kids, poke around the new Camry or whatever, is, you know, is still struggling a bit. So.
Yeah,
fascinating times.
That's actually a good segue for LA Auto Show, as you said, is coming up. And the LA Auto Show, we go for the press events, and usually the week leading up to it, there's a handful of pop-up events, either from a company that will be on display there, you get a preview, or a company that's not going to be on display there, but they want to capitalize on media being in town. So they'll say, I don't know, somebody like Bentley will go, we're not at the LA Auto Show, but we're going to do a, you know, like a one night or, you know, one day event at, you know, some art gallery downtown LA. And we're going to have a couple cars on display and we're going to show you shoes and stuff, you know, so some combination of something fun, right? And
it was a fun night. It was really interesting.
It's actually a pleasure to go to those things. But the LA Auto Show, when it's open to the public, is meant to be an opportunity for people, for enthusiasts to go, I am shopping for a new car. The LA Auto Show is fun. It's an opportunity for me in one day to hop around from booth to booth and test out and sit in and take a look at up close three or four different new cars or SUVs or whatever, or trucks. And I think in an aspect, it's fun. But as we've been saying over the past couple of years, the auto shows have been getting smaller. Some of the car companies have had less of a footprint or no footprint at all. But also, like what we saw in Detroit, it's becoming more experiential. There's the whole like off-road section, and there's Jeeps that you can drive and electric cars that they're driving inside, and you can climb up rocks in a ram and then down the other side. So it is evolving a little bit. But to your point, I am surprised Porsche is out completely. Porsche has a huge LA market, a customer base. They've always had one of the best presentations. Their whole display, the room that they had at the LA Auto Show was always very significant. And yes, the new Porsche Macan being all electric would have been a huge LA debut. Maybe the vehicle's just not ready yet, but for them to not show up at all, the room is empty.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what they're going to put in it. It's going to be a lunch room or something.
A pretty, I mean, Galpin are there with some Porsches, but that's the dealers. Yeah. So it's not like a big international. It's funny that you're talking about the McCann EV.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Jewelry can say many things on your wedding day. As a wedding band, it can say, "This is a forever symbol of our forever love." As a gift to your wedding party, it can say, "Thanks for standing up there with us." Blue Nile can help you find the piece that says it all and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com.
Where I live in South Bay, which those who don't know, LA is just sort of south of LAX. It's down in the sort of beach communities. And I am on the test drive route of all the prototypes for BMW, Mercedes, yeah. Porsche, and others. So I can quite regularly be like getting a cup of coffee or walking the, you know, taking the kids for a walk, and something top secret drive past me. And the other day, like a Macan EV, pretty much undisguised, just drove past me. I just didn't have my phone handy. A Cybertruck drove past, and all because SpaceX is up the road. And it's actually, if you look at the going off at a tangent, if you check out our Instagram, Edmunds Cars, at the moment, we have some pretty interesting shots of the Cybertruck, and particularly how some of the panels are, you know, are or not fitting together. I think there's a bunch of people at SEMA would be interested in looking at that.
Yeah, right. It's interesting because when you do walk around SEMA and you see the amount of time and hours of somebody putting into, you know, a hand-built specialty car, you know, in some cases, you know, $1 million budget, and then go, that's literally a bunch of guys and gals like forming it by hand, and the Cybertruck. Yeah, it's kind of a quality mess right now. But still, it's like, I don't know. Is that a production version? Are they going to be shipped yet? When do they ship? At the end of the month, I guess.
No, I mean, they were shipping 3 years ago. We've had an order, and I mean, I went to that launch event, you know, the famous one where they smashed the windows. I can't even remember when that was. We put an order in that night. So it's coming at some point.
I guess when we see an actual dealer delivered or whatever Tesla delivered to a customer version, then we can really start.
When I turn up in my Cybertruck, you're going to feel pretty insignificant in your Lightning.
Yeah, probably. Or I might be fine.
Or maybe not.
I might be fine.
You know, I had a strange thing. We have a BMW iX as part of our long-term test fleet, and it's outside my house at the moment. I was driving it through Hermosa Beach, and I love the car. I think it's a fantastic car. Love the interior. Can't stand the way it looks. I know it's deliberately polarizing, but ours is white, which makes it even worse. And I'm driving through Hermosa Beach, and one comes towards me. And the guy's obviously super proud that he's chosen this like way out machine. So he's giving me the full wave.
Yeah. are you kind of like hunkering down in your chair? Like, don't wave to me. I don't want you to know I've got this thing.
I was like, you know, I hate the way this thing looks, but
Other than it looks though, it's gotta be,
it's an awesome car.
It's a good car, right? Yeah.
It is literally an awesome car. It's just, I think it's very strange. It's for those who don't know the iX, it has this very extrovert exterior, where it just feels like there's angles and lines going on everywhere. And then the interior is this beautiful sort of lounge concept, which we used to own a BMW i3, and I absolutely adored that car. And all we wanted was a scaled up i3. And in some ways, that's what the iX is, but it's not pretty. So you've got the interior, which is fantastic, and then this weird exterior. But the dynamics of the thing are awesome. So really what you need to do is buy one in black or something, so you hide a lot of the detailing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I think on their website it's black.
Yeah,
like black. On the BMW website, it's black.
Which tells you something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Normally you launch a car in silver so you can see the design. Like they launched the Audi TT and things like that in silver. If you're trying to like launch something in black, that tells you something.
It's full electric now. I'm so confused by the BMW lineup of vehicles.
So the iX is the bespoke electric vehicle. So you have, so what they're doing at the moment, they've got a twin track approach. So they have what you might call bespoke electric vehicles. So ground up EVs, of which the iX is their ground up EV. So there's no gas version. But then what they're doing with everything else is something quite different to, say, what Porsche is doing and what Mercedes is doing. What they're saying is, we're going to build a 5 Series and we're going to build a gas version, a hybrid version, and an electric version, and take your pick. So you have the i7 and the 7 Series, and I just drove last Monday the new i5, which is the electric version of the 5 Series. Now, Porsche and Mercedes would argue that that brings in too many compromises. So you end up with a compromised gas car and a compromised electric car. Honestly, having driven these things, I've driven the Mercedes EQE, which is ground up. I've driven the i5, which is this kind of like, you know, patchwork quilt. Honestly, i5 is a great car. It's a really, it's the first BMW
I've driven. Great car. Yeah.
The i5 is a great car. It's the first BMW in a long time that I think looks fantastic. Cracking interior, drives beautifully. Yeah, it's a really nice thing.
So the confusion is there's the iX, which is all electric. Then there's the XM, which is plug-in hybrid.
Yeah,
but also it's an M. It's also an M car.
Yeah, that. I mean, I did a video on that. If you want to see me rant, watch the video on YouTube.
Yeah, right. That's the one you don't like.
But Yeah, so that's the M car. So that's like trying to do what AMG are doing now, where it's like, okay, if we're going to build a sports car, make it really expensive, call it a M car. It's all getting really confusing. But I think the idea is, if you're a serious early adopter and you want to be the tech geek, buy the iX, because that's making a statement. If you're just the kind of person who says, quite fancy an electric car, but you know, I'm not going to give up my sedan or my SUV, then you buy the i5 or the i4 or the i7, and you've basically got the car you always had, apart from it's super quiet, a lot faster, and you have to plug it in.
But in my mind, the i5 is so much better looking than what Mercedes is doing.
Yeah, way better looking than EQ. The quality's better. The interior's nicer. I was really impressed by it. I just thought it was a really nice way to travel. And I'm sure we don't want to get back into the infrastructure debate, but you know, if you could add real confidence in charging that up when you need to charge it up, then, you know, that would just be a really nice car to run around in.
And there are hybrid examples of these things like you're talking about. So they're doing electric and hybrid and gas engine, which actually kind of brings up the next vehicle, because this has been getting social media news all over the place. is Ram had been talking about their electric truck. But they just hit us with, which we kind of expected, a hybrid version. They're saying, hey, this is a plug-in electric hybrid version of a truck. But what's interesting is it has a six.
Well, it's not. Yeah, it's sort of not a hybrid.
It's sort of not a hybrid, right?
So, it's not a hybrid. That's the point. It's a, it's an electric car with an onboard generator.
With an onboard generator. So to be clear about this, so it has an inline six, but the inline
has
six,
a V6.
Is it a V6? Sorry,
I'm pretty sure it's a V6. Yeah. Sorry to
Yeah, I'm sorry. It is. Yes, it's a V6. But the six cylinder does not power the wheels at all. As a matter of fact, you can't even change the RPM. It is a generator. It fires up and it's steady state, whatever RPM, and it's just there to charge the batteries that are on board, which is, did we figure out what it is? Something like 92 kilowatt battery pack. That's
yeah, which, just to give people some sort of sense of context, like, I think the Model 3's battery, Tesla Model 3, is about 70 kilowatts. So,
and my Lightning is what, like 112 or something?
Yeah, so this is still a, like a, this is still a sizable battery. So the idea of this thing, and I'll be right up front of it, I think this is a genius idea for the world in which we live right now. So this is not, there's nothing new here. If you go back a bit, the Chevy Volt was an electric car with a generator. BMW did a version of the i3, which we owned, my family owned, which had a, which was an electric car with a little engine on board that sounded super agricultural, but the idea was it charges you up and gets you out of jail when you need it. And this is the same principle here. So basically the car, they're changing. So this has got 92 kilowatts. And so this is quite different to the Ram Rev, which is the all electric one, which has got 168 or 229. So it's kind of, in roughly terms, half the battery's half as big. So you're not going to go as far, but what it allows you to do is run it as an EV truck the majority of the time. And I think it's going to, they're claiming well over 100 miles. But then when you go on the road trip, or more pertinently, when you're towing, then you just use the gas engine to keep yourself charged as you go along. And they're saying it'll charge, I think it's 130 kilowatts, which is ample fast enough. So basically, it's not, one of the problems with the BMW was that there was times where the engine struggled to keep up with the charge.
Right.
So you end up having to drive slow.
It wasn't enough engine, right.
It wasn't enough engine. But I think what they're saying here is, I mean, it's a 3.5 liter V6, right?
So that's a huge generator, basically. That's a huge onboard generator. Like, it feels like you could have done it with one cylinder. You could have put a small, motorcycle engine in it and generated enough power, put a Honda generator under the hood. But this is like you said, a 3.5 liter V6 engine, but
3.6 liters. Yeah. So what they're saying is this thing is a 130 kilowatt onboard charger. Now, a typical, your typical DC fast charger that you plug your EV into it is normally, these days, could be 350, but many of them are 150. So it's basically like having a DC fast charger on board, which is also the same way that hydrogen cars work, by the way, that they are, a hydrogen car is just an electric car with a hydrogen power plant that creates electricity and charges the car. And lots of trains, I mean, trains used to run this way, where you have a diesel engine that converts it into electricity that powers the train. So the technology is not new, but it just seems like a brilliant solution for the here and now. And I'm kind of surprised that other people haven't, I'm kind of surprised that other people haven't done this, because if you most of the time, like for you, Matt, you're going to be knocking around LA. Most of the time, you're just going to use electricity.
Yeah.
But then when you go long distance or you need to tow, you've got that peace of mind. And so you might find you'd barely use the gas engine. But it's a cool idea. Really cool idea.
It's what Fisker Karma was supposed to be originally, if you think about it.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember the first Polestar, though. I think that was a genuine hybrid. I don't think that was a generator. But yeah, the technology is not new. It's just... Yeah, and so now they're saying, well, actually, you can go 600 miles and you can tow you know, you can tow huge
right.
amounts.
So here's the benefit now is they're saying it's an electric truck. It has the onboard generator and the combined range of electric and gas is 690 miles, essentially. Now, obviously not towing or fully loaded up, but that's the idea. And because it has the electric motors with an incredible amount of torque, 663 horsepower, 615 pound-feet of torque, it'll tow 14,000 pounds. And obviously, if you're towing a huge load, that gas engine's going to kick in and keep those batteries charged, and those electric motors are going to be all the power you need to tow that thing around. A 2,625-pound payload capacity as well. So, and by the way, 0 to 60 in 4.4 seconds. So it feels like this is exactly what the truck market needed.
Yeah. You still got two electric motors. So you've got all wheel drive. You've got all that torque and everything else. Yeah. So yeah, it's cool. And it's way better in this concept than a plug-in hybrid because you've just got the range. You probably find most people, depending on how you use a truck and where you live in the country, but you know, you might go months and barely use the engine, but then it's there. It's there for you. So it takes until we sort the infrastructure and battery technology moves on a little bit, particularly in the truck market. This is probably the best compromise. I mean, I think this will be a super desirable thing.
I think so too. Now, keep in mind, whatever size fuel tank it has, this isn't like, hey, you're getting on the on-ramp, so you floor it and it goes full throttle and your ejectors are firing and you're sucking down that fuel. This engine, I guess in theory, is steady state. It's like, I don't know if it needs more charge. Will it increase RPM of the gas engine like on its own? But for the most part, it's not meant to be controlled by your foot. It's not controlled by the throttle or the accelerator. So it should essentially sip fuel. It should be a very fuel efficient V6 engine because you don't need it to move around the weight of the vehicle. You just need it to charge the batteries.
I mean, it's like you've seen it, people trying to do this in the past where, you know, you buy one of those Honda generators and, you know, carry it around with you, then use it to charge a car. It's a simple concept.
It's that, except on most electric vehicles, like my Lightning, they don't let you drive the vehicle and charge it at the same time. Otherwise people would have the Honda generator in the back plugged into the side of the truck while they're driving.
Yeah.
The Ram actually does charge the vehicle while you're driving. That's the beauty of having it on board. Otherwise, why would I just keep a Honda generator in the bed of my truck and just drive around, have that thing sip fuel, and I'd never have to go to a gas station or charge it. I would just drive around with a little generator in the back. I mean, you fill it up with gas every once in a while, just a generator. Anyway, I think it's a cool idea. It seems to look good. If everything works the way it's supposed to work, then I think, and you're right, it's not new technology, but this is kind of a game changer in that space.
Yeah, I mean, you say, well, should it work? Well, there's nothing really complicated going on here, so I wouldn't say, well, and also that Ram, you know, it'd be really interesting because you're going to have this and you're going to have the Ram Rev, which is the fully electric, including sort of massive battery versions over 220 kilowatts, I think it is. So you're going to have that option. Yeah, 229 kilowatt hours is the biggest battery they're offering. So it will be super interesting to see in the market, like, what people actually buy and also how the prices line up as well, because obviously an engine 3.5 liter V6 isn't cheap, but then probably cheaper than batteries. So how will the price sit relative to the full electric trucks?
Yeah.
I mean, at the moment they're saying like the electric market is like 8% of trucks. I mean, actually that sounds quite high to me, but you know, and this is part of what we're seeing in the market, you know, Chevy Silverado EVs delayed, you know, again, you've got the Ram coming, you've got, you know, Ford's not, Lightning is not, you know, having had that initial burst of interest, is not really kicking on as they'd hoped. And I'm sure a lot of that is to do with infrastructure and the cost of the vehicle. So, you know, this is a good solution. It'd also be really interesting to see whether anybody else either will or even can jump on the bandwagon. Like, I've no idea whether Ford, I mean, hypothetically, you know, could you make a Lightning with a engine in the nose? You'd lose the frunk. So, you know, a lot of the appeal of the full EVs is you get this massive front, and in a truck, that's great because you've got this secure, huge load area. But you would lose that. But could you, in theory, put an engine in the front of a Lightning and have a same effect? Maybe.
You know, same with the Silver. We don't know exactly what's going to happen with the next version of the Ford Lightning, something that they're already working on. It won't be sort of a homologation of the F-150 like my truck is. It will be a ground up clean sheet of paper design.
Yeah. And the irony is actually in the current F-150, which is the ladder frame and everything else, that might be easier to do this sort of,
it would be to do this sort of trick. Yeah, it would be. I think Ram is onto something here. I think they've got, I'd love to drive it. I'd love to test it out. I think they will take some of that Lightning audience with them if this thing comes out sooner than, let's say, a new Lightning would.
Yeah, there's a bit of ego here as well, isn't there? I mean, it's kind of interesting that Ram have kind of come out and said, look, even before our BEV comes out, we're going to do this. For Ford now to come out and say, we did this Lightning, we all said this is the future and everyone's going to win. For them to come out and say, oh, we've now got this like hedging bet. I mean, I suppose they've got the F-150 hybrid and you just argue it's an extension of that. But
right.
It's an interesting journey. Like,
is similar, but it powers the wheels. But you're right. But that's a fantastic truck. And honestly, that's kind of the F-150 to get right now.
We have a hybrid on our test fleet at Edmunds, and it's a great thing. Super fast as well.
Yeah, and the revisions that they're making. So if you do make it to the LA Auto Show, there will be the new F-150, and there's a few revisions to the F-150 hybrid. I think it has a little bit larger battery on it now, so it's got a little bit more like offline hours, I guess you could say, offline power with the battery, so you can power your job site and stuff more before those gas engines need to kick in. But that's essentially what Ram is doing, but making it an onboard generator sort of powering the wheels. So I think those would be super competitive. The F-150 hybrid and the Ram hybrid? I don't know. They call it a hurricane.
What are you calling it?
I
guess it's not a hybrid. I can't remember. It's a Ram Charger.
It's a Ram Charger EV. That's what they're calling it.
Because there's only one propulsion source.
Right. So it's the Ram 1500 Ram Charger. That's weird.
It's a Ram It's just an electric truck with a generator.
If you want to go see it, presumably it'll be at the LAO show. Look for the Ram Charger. And then that should get you into whatever the hell we're talking about here.
Yeah. And also it's the sort of updated Ram is a nice looking truck. It is a nice looking truck.
Yeah, it is a nice looking truck.
I love
what else can we expect at the LA Auto Show? I think we can expect a little bit of an announcement from Ford today, the California Special package on the Ford GT. It's a trim package. It's $1,995. It's something we've seen in the past.
It's weird. If I think of like Mustangs in California, I just think of higher cars going up Highway 1 at driving erratically at 20 miles an hour. So good to see what that looks. It's a bit of blue, isn't it? It's a bit of blue.
Yeah, it's got some blue trim in the grill and the wheels, and the interior's got some blue leather and some stitching and stuff. And Mustang fans know that the California Special or the CS package is the GT / CS account, the GT California Special. Not anything new in the legacy of Mustang. It's just a different variation on the car. Some of you guys might really like it. Chances are you will see it at the LA Auto Show. Also, you'll see some of the things that we got to see in Detroit, like the Mustang Mach-E Rally or the Rally.
Yeah, I think that's a cool thing. Lucid will, I believe, have the Gravity, which is their SUV that's been trailed for a long time and a vehicle they really need.
I hope it does well. It's the Lucid seems like there's some potential there. It's a nice luxury vehicle. You brought one over. Yeah, it's sharp looking. It's fast. But it's just like every time I go online, I see Edmonds on Twitter pointing out all this shit falling off that car.
Yeah, I mean, ours, to be fair,
it's unfortunate.
Like, they get quite upset when we talk about some of the problems that we've had. But to be fair to them, it's got better and better. The problem with that car is they just launched it too soon. And I think, you know, in a quiet moment, they would admit as much. So, you know, we've just had so many over-the-air updates. We've had hardware. So it's just got better and better to the point where now you think actually this thing's starting to hang together a lot better. And the fundamentals are fantastic. So it looks great. It goes super fast. It handles beautifully. It rides beautifully. It's a really nice thing. It's just, I just wish they'd spent that extra bit of time getting it, you know, getting it really into shape before they launched it. And I suspect with the Gravity, because it'll share so much technology with a sedan, they'll just be that bit further around. But then
this episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
You know, look at the Cybertruck and the problems they're having to build that as well. So, I mean, there was a thing came out this week. I think Lucid's are losing $350,000 a car at the moment, which is suboptimal.
Yeah, tough. That's tough. But I mean, SUV Rivian looks cool. The SUV, I think, is maybe better looking than the sedan. The sedan's got kind of a RoboCop helmet thing going on for me, but
I think that ages you.
maybe it does. Although the SUV does as well, but it just feels like it's got more proportion to it and it should be kind of cool.
There's some crazy. There's some really low lease rates going on with Lucids at the moment as well. My Instagram.
Oh yeah, I'm
cars. If you
want
to follow,
now.
Yeah, they're actually there absolutely. There you go. Get the plug in, Matt. Yeah. They're really pushing. They're really pushing some lease rates. So yeah, they're going to be there. There's going to be, you know, some interesting Toyota stuff. It's going to be a decent show. So I'm excited. We'll come back next week and talk about it.
Yeah. What else are we missing? What else did we want to hit today before we?
I drove a couple of interesting EVs.
Yeah,
I went to Spain, which was nice, and drove the Volvo EX30, which was also nice.
Interesting car for them. I think an important car for them.
Yeah, the video I just did is up on YouTube. If you go to Edmunds Cars on YouTube, and I thought it was a really nice little thing. The problem is it's like super small.
I was going to say it seems smaller than I thought.
It's shorter than a mini Countryman. It's properly small, which would be fantastic in like Paris or London. And I think even in somewhere like LA or New York, I mean, it's an EV. So actually you've got packaging advantages. So if you're like 2 6-foot people can sit behind each other just. And it's got decent trunk space. And I just thought it was a really sweet, well thought out little car. They do like a single motor version with like 280 something horsepower, which is really nice. And then they do a nutty one, which has got over 400 horsepower, dual motor, 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. But it's kind of crazy because I mean, that's what a 911 Carrera did at our test track. But this is like a tiny little family car. And what they haven't done is say, oh, now it's got 430 horsepower. We need to, you know, upgrade the suspension, fit some Recaros and all that stuff. They basically just gone, well, let's just keep this really cute little, you know, family car that, you know, is quite softly sprung and rolls around a bit. And we'll just whack a 400 horsepower in it. So it's really quite a strange thing to drive. It's like a little hot rod. But I thought it was great. I think the problem in America, and also it's cheap. It starts at, including destination, it starts at $36,000, which, all right, not cheap, but still significantly less than the average price of a gas car.
So here's the interesting proposition is I think this is probably a market that was made for a car that was made for markets outside of the U.S. And they're bringing it here. I think we're going to find it a little on the small side. Even at that price point. But I think we're going to look at the competition out there at what's available now and go, you know, for 40 grand, this is a sharp looking vehicle and it looks nice on the inside, looks nice on the outside. It's got pretty decent range. It's quick enough. I mean, if you can go 275 miles in this car, like they're saying with the single motor slower version, this is pretty interesting.
Yeah, and it's not. And the 36 grand car, and then you've got like the, if you lease it, you've got the tax rebates coming in. So the lease rates are going to be super competitive. And the 36 grand car is like a proper car. It's not one of these like, oh, we're just going to bring it in and then you'll never see it. It's actually got, you know, it's got good safety, good safety kit. It's got Apple CarPlay. It's got, you know, it's a car that you could absolutely buy and live with. And I hope they sell a ton of them because I really like it. But I think over here, it's going to be, for a lot of people, and maybe in Europe too, it's going to be a second car. And maybe that's okay. It's going to be a reasonably expensive second car.
I mean, the audience here is going to be, do you want to get something that's fairly affordable and actually get into a nice brand, into arguably the entry-level luxury segment? I don't know where they're... I don't know where you see on the car where they're cutting the corners. Does the interior feel a little cheap? I mean,
clearly they've got to say something, but I think they've been clever in the way that they've gone about it. So I'll give you an example. I think it's really interesting. They did a thing. So they say, okay, how do we make a door cheaper? So they're using a lot of recycled materials inside, which is quite interesting to look at anyway. And feels that it doesn't feel, you know, the touchy feely stuff doesn't feel particularly cheap. You know, I just sat in a Chevy, which felt a lot cheaper. But what they've done, instead of having speakers in the doors, they've put a soundbar, you know, the sort of thing that you have in front of your TV, and they've just spread that across the dashboard, which looks quite cool as a Harman Kardon version. But then they've taken the electric window switches and stuck them in the middle of the car, which ergonomically maybe isn't ideal. But what that means is you've just got a door that's simpler to make, but also has got like a really big door pocket. So you've got some extra storage. And so I think they've
all
been
they
quite clever.
All they need is a power window in there and a window motor, but they didn't need all the wiring for the switches and everything else. They just
know the speaker and engineering all that and everything else. And they just, you know, they'll just get a soundbar in from Harman Kardon and it goes. And I think there's speakers in the rear, but it's much, much simpler. And then there's other stuff like they've done the Tesla trick of just having a 12-inch vertically mounted touchscreen in the middle of the car. So, you know, the bad thing about that is your speedo's in the middle instead of in front of you, which is weird for a brand obsessed with safety. But again, it saves you money if just going down the iPad route.
Is there a heads up display though? Because that's how they get around that.
No,
negative. No heads up for speedo.
That's a money saving thing. But you know, there's some cool stuff. Like they've got the glove boxes moved from in front of the passenger to sort of in the center. You don't get into it. You get into it and think this is kind of clever and interesting rather than this is, you know, like it's the same thing. Like, you know, sometimes you go to IKEA and you can buy like IKEA's cheapest stuff. And then you go, yeah, this feels pretty cheap. But like mid-range IKEA stuff, you generally think this is quite nicely designed, well thought out, and I can stick it in pretty much any home and it's fine. Like these are IKEA, you can't see because it's a podcast, but I'm holding IKEA curtains that are right next to me because I like them. They're the right color, they're well designed, the quality's okay. Happy days. $40, ladies and gentlemen.
But you're right. You're 100% is is the IKEA example. You can go get the coffee table that's the hollow piece of wood, or you can spend a little extra and get the IKEA solid piece of wood. It's a shitty piece of wood, but it's feels and looks a lot better, and it looks like you could put this pretty much anywhere.
And I'm sure Volvo would not like, I know they're both Swedish, but Volvo would probably not see itself as IKEA. I'm sure they would see themselves a bit more market like that, and rightly so. But I thought it was just a really clever little car. And I hope it does well.
I hope it does well for them as well. And if it does, I think people will get more excited or equally as excited about the larger EX90, which we'll get at some point, which is the larger, more expensive 3-row, 7-passenger SUV. But also these vehicles from Volvo are going to sort of cross over with whatever Polestar is doing, the relationship there. And Polestar's got an EV that's coming out as well, like a SUV EV with their
they've got the Polestar 1, 2, 3, and 4. It's a great naming strategy. I'm sure they pay somebody a fortune for it. I mean, that's thing, and the reason why it's so cheap is because Volvo is now Chinese owned, so you've got the power of Geely money and infrastructure and buying power behind it. But interestingly, I mean, the cars are originally going to be built in China, but they're also, I think, opening production in Europe as well, presumably because of, obviously, there's a lot of geopolitics going on at the moment.
The Polestar 2 is pretty small.
The Polestar 2 is the Model 3 rival, and then you're getting into the SUVs. And I think the one was really weird, because the one was, we're going to launch an electric brand, but actually let's launch it with a hybrid. That was the beautiful looking like executive coupe thing, which was like 150 grand. Then the two
I drove that. That was nice. Polestar.
That was a cool thing. And then the two was like, we need to get into the market. So this thing looks like a conventional sedan. It's a smart thing, but it's a kind of Model 3 rival. And they've just updated that. And then the big sellers will be the SUVs. And the idea is that Volvo will continue to do sensible family vehicles with a focus on safety, and Polestar will do the safety stuff as well, but will focus on more kind of expressive design and sporty.
Right. But they want to get into the SUV size of things. The Polestar 3 will be the SUV, but it'll be 2-row. It'll be large 2-row, whatever you want to call large 2-row. And then the Volvo will be 3-row. Right.
So it's going to be more of a, it's probably going to be a little bit less practical, a little bit more design oriented. I mean, the original concept was that Polestar would come and sell direct Tesla style, and they could start this alternative brand that would be selling direct. And then everybody basically said, and legislative sort of said, nah, you're really just Volvo with a different name. So that's not happening anymore.
Yeah. But you're right. And maybe there is a little bit of cross shopping Volvo and Polestar. And I think the brand managers will care, but I don't know that Geely's going to care, the parent company. But
no. And there's, if you open yourself up to a bigger audience, it's, yeah, there's some really nice. I mean, the thing I've always liked about Volvo is that you go and talk to them and they don't try and do what everybody else is. Like, you go on all these, I've been to so many press launches, and you turn up and it's like some huge family SUV, and they say, this went around the Nürburgring in like 8.5 minutes. And you just think, like, who cares? Volvo just stand up and say, this is a big family SUV, and what families want is lots of comfort, technology, safety, and space.
Throwing a sharp design, throwing a handsome design as well, and you've got yourself a nice recipe.
And the best seats in the world. And you've got a great car. I just love the fact that they have this sort of like very kind of Swedish, very kind of down to earth. It's like, this is what people want. And I think it's very cool. They're not trying to be something they're not. I haven't driven the EX90. Looking forward to that one. It's a load of money. It's going to be like over 80 grand. But EX30.
What's Polestar 3 going to be? Because that's kind of the more stylistic, two-row version. With the cool
plus,
little,
I think,
wing in the front and the, whatever. I mean, once you start comparing tech specs and range and stuff like that, I guess you kind of figure out where, but, where you want to go. But
if you're shopping for like a Tesla Model 3, which is a bit more expensive or something like that, then have a look at the XC. You got to keep an open mind, because I think you're going to say, particularly in the US, it's really small, but actually still surprisingly practical.
All right. So what do you say? You want to wrap it up and then...
I don't know. We could ask the audience. But... Are you sick of us yet?
They're not chiming in yet today. We're not taking phone calls today.
I just did. I just was giving something away, but I shot our every year we do an A to Z of like all the new cars next year, and we shot it yesterday. And like time we got to Volvo or Volkswagen, I was like, is anybody still with us? Because this show always ends up being like, you know, a chunk of time. So anyway,
yeah,
we digress.
All right, so we're gonna wrap it up. I appreciate you guys listening. And if you make it out to LA Auto Show, let you know, hit us up on social media. Let us know if there's anything there that you thought was interesting, anything that you're looking forward to. We'd love to hear you about it. If you have any complaints about Tesla, Weaver on Cars is the account that you're going after.
Somebody did once break, a Tesla fanatic did actually break it, not break into it. I didn't get hacked, but he did come into Weaver on Cars, and all it said was, "You are a terrible journalist." That was the comment. Which, you know, is very perceptive.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Alrighty then.
Upset my mom.
Yeah. All right. We're gonna wrap things up. Edmunds.com is the website, and CarCast Show as well, which I think hasn't been updated in a while. A little bit of a transition thing. I'm trying to sort of rebuild, get back on all of the CarCast stuff. We're trying to figure that out with the Corolla team and whatnot. So hopefully there'll be something worth bragging about there at some point. But in the meantime, we're going to do some podcasts. If you guys are listening to this and you missed some of the SEMA podcasts, good news, you didn't miss it. There were some audio issues. They've been coming in a little late. We're trying to salvage some of the interviews. I went around with a portable recorder, and I guess there was a bad mic cable, and it was really kind of screwing up some of the interviews. So we're doing what we can, but we have to edit like every audio beat of that thing, and it's taking some time. So it won't be perfect, but it's salvageable. Hopefully good enough for you guys to listen to. Not studio quality by any means, but some very interesting interviews. We went around to a handful of the exhibitors there. And then on a separate episode, I got to sit down with the Ring brothers, Mike and Jim Ring, and kind of just chat with them for, you know, a good, you know, 40, 45 minutes. So some SEMA episodes coming forward as well.
And we're back in sync as well. We had a few technical things, but we're back in harness once a week. If you were wondering why we appeared a little bit out of sync.
Yes, we say that, but you know, LA Auto Show is coming up. Holidays are coming up. Things are going to get screwy again. But I think we're gonna make it happen. We're gonna make it.
Formula One in Vegas.
Yeah, Formula One in Vegas. Which, by the way, Vegas is not a fan of Formula One in Vegas. Everybody I talk to that lives there is like, we're leaving town, and everyone who works there is going, I don't even know if I want to work that day. Like every Uber driver and cab driver is like, I don't even think I want to work.
Yeah, and it's not selling very well either because it's so expensive.
It's so expensive. It's just It's crazy how expensive it is.
It would be probably cheaper to fly to the UK and go to Silverstone. Genuinely.
It actually probably be more fun.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.